Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pavitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Project Love podcast. It's Vicky here, the love coach of the Project Love duo. And what I love more than anything is having deep and meaningful conversations about love, dating, and relationships. Today's conversation is about a topic that I've had a personal interest in and one that I was curious to learn more about, and that is the topic of codependency. I invited Jo Westwood onto the podcast for this episode. Jo is a codependency expert who specialises in helping women to escape from codependency, reclaim their lives with confidence, and live lovingly fierce. Jo is also a life coach and author who is known for her straightforward, down-to-earth approach in helping you to improve your life. In this episode, we talk about what codependency is and how it can show up in our relationships, from our work relationships, our friendships and romantic relationships, and we talk about how it's impacting us to be on this scale of codependency. It's such an important topic and one that I don't think people are talking enough about. And if this resonates with you and if you feel like you are on that scale of codependency like Jo describes, then know that you are not alone. Release any judgment as you listen to this episode. And Jo shares some wonderful resources that can help you if you want to go deeper into this topic. And I'll also be adding those links to the show notes of books and resources that Jo's mentioned. And Jo has also very kindly offered a discount for the Project Love community to buy her Lovingly Fierce online course at a discount. And again, I will add the link to the show notes so you can find it there. Okay, so without further ado, here is the episode. I hope you enjoy it. Jo, big welcome to the Project Love podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being our guest today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So to kick things off, tell me about what you do and how you got here.
So I am the codependence coach. So I help women to escape from codependency. And what that means for people who don't know, which is a lot of people, is so codependency, as I define it kind of briefly, is an addiction to kind of chronic people pleasing and validation from outside of yourself. So I help women to get over that and to escape from that, because it's if that resonates with you, you know it's really exhausting and it affects every area of your life. How I got here is I'm a recovering codependent. So I have been codependent all my life, but didn't realize until I got married. So the place that it showed up for me most was in romantic relationships. And it really took for me, so I kind of repeated the same pattern in every relationship that I'd been in, but it took for me to get married to really address it and realize that that was what was going on for me. And as I started to understand it and work through it, then I realized that that was where I could kind of give the most help and assistance and share my learnings and my recovery journey through my coaching work. People usually have one area where it shows up more than others, and that can be romantic relationships, family relationships, friendships, work. It usually is the area of your life that feels most important to you is the area of your life where it will show up the most. So how I understand it, there are different interpretations of it, but how I understand it and how it works for me is that it's an addiction. So it's an addiction to other people, validation outside of yourself, and kind of basically being enmeshed in sort of unhealthy relationship dynamics. So you can apply that to any area of your life, because every area of your life includes interacting with other human beings. So a few examples of how it might show up. A big one that you will recognize immediately if you're listening to this and you are codependent is that codependent people control with kindness and manipulate with kindness. Yeah, it's a heavy one. So what you might find yourself doing is overextending yourself, doing favors, I'm doing air quotes around those, favors for people, or, you know, doing everything for your partner or a family member or a business colleague in the hope that they will see your worth and return that the love and the goodwill that you're giving, rather than just being able to ask for what you need or being able to set boundaries and kind of set your expectations in a relationship of this is what I would like to give to you and this is what I'd expect to receive back. You kind of do this manipulation with kindness and then you end up exhausted and resentful. So that's a classic codependent behavior. Another one is not knowing your own feelings. So not being able to, not really understanding them and not being able to express them clearly unless you have some sort of outside guidance. So you might see this show up in a romantic relationship in something simple like, where do you want to eat tonight? And you can't respond until you get some kind of guidance from your partner about where they want to eat tonight, because it's more important to you to please them than it is to please you.
Is this a very common... I don't know if there are any statistics around how common it is and whether it's actually you're on a scale of codependency. So you could be somewhere on that scale and you might be sort of lower end of the scale or higher end of the scale. Or is it, would you see it as black and white, you are or you're not?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a scale. There aren't any statistics around it. But I personally think that it is an epidemic, particularly amongst women. So I think that in a patriarchal society, men are taught the values of narcissism and women are taught the values of codependency. So codependency being be nice, be polite, please everyone, anticipate people's needs, put other people above yourself. And men are taught traits of narcissism and that they are... that they are valued in men. So primacy of work, focus on self, kind of grandiose behaviours. And then the two kind of interplay. So codependence and narcissist, I see, are kind of two sides of the same coin and they kind of fit together hand in glove. And so we see this interplay all the time in society between the masculine and the feminine, between the codependent and the narcissistic. A simple way to explain that is that people with narcissistic traits always need to be fed and codependent people always need to feed. So codependent people give, overgive, and narcissistic people take. So when we grow up in a society that teaches us those dynamics, if there's any sort of dysfunction in your life growing up, which for most of us there is because we're brought up by human beings and most of our parents aren't perfect, enlightened, spiritual beings who've been and done a lot of therapy before they had children. then those, you know, those either codependent or narcissistic traits are going to come out in you. And I definitely think it is a sliding scale. So I think, yes, it's very, very common. There are no statistics around it because it's something that is needed for a patriarchal society to work, is for women to be codependent and take the brunt of the emotional labor of society. This is getting big and heavy, isn't it? All of a sudden. Yeah. I think lots and lots and lots of people have low end kind of codependent traits. So people pleasing and that kind of thing, but you will really notice the difference when it gets into sort of addiction level codependency, where it's really overtaking your life. You have a very low sense of self-worth and just sense of self in general. So yeah, there is a difference between those two.
So you could be somebody who has a tendency to people please, but the difference is when it gets to addiction level. Is it when it's related to your sense of self-worth, that's when it starts to become addictive?
What I would say is codependency, it can be quite hard to define and recover from, because a lot of the behaviours in codependency are celebrated in society, not just in women and in terms of a patriarchal society, but just in general. So trying hard, being kind, being generous, giving of yourself, and also seeking praise. It's a natural thing. You know, we're humans are social creatures. We're not meant to live alone. We're not meant to live without feedback. Nobody wants to live a life where we don't hear, "You look great today," or "That piece of work was amazing," or "You're so funny." We all want that, and that's totally normal and healthy and natural. But I think the issue starts to come when your sense of self-worth relies wholly on that feedback. When, so for example, if you split from a relationship that wasn't that great, and you can kind of see that it wasn't that great, and hint, if your friends are telling you it's not great, listen to them, because they see things that you can't. But then if you don't know who you are, for example, after that, if you go into a complete black hole of depression and you have no sense of self once you've split from a relationship, that's a sign, for example, that you could be getting into the addiction level of codependency. So, and I know this resonates for so many people. Yeah. So there's the natural kind of grief and loss that could come at the end of a relationship. You know, there's, you know, the nights you need to spend just with a pint of ice cream and a movie and feeling a bit sad. But once it gets to the point where, God, I don't actually know who I am without this person, and even though the relationship wasn't great, I'd do anything to get it back, just because then at least I'll know who I am. And it's that kind of need for an anchor. So a way that I describe codependency is that it makes you feel untethered. So it makes you feel like a tiny little boat floating in the middle of an ocean, or like a balloon that's slipped the hand of the child that's holding it, and you're just floating in the air and you don't actually know who you are without another person or a situation or a group of people to anchor you and hold you in place. And so if you don't feel those things, if you think, yeah, you know what, my relationship is lovely, my home life is lovely, my family are great, my work is great, but if I didn't have those things, I'd be sad, but I'd still know who I was, then you're probably quite a healthy, you know, healthy person that's got a good level of self-worth. If that thought fills you with dread and you feel like, I'd rather just not be here than lose something, because it would totally decimate my sense of self-worth, then that's a clue that you're getting into the kind of higher end of the spectrum of codependency.
I think a lot of people who are listening to this will really resonate with what you're saying, and they'll be wondering, am I on that scale of codependency? Yeah. How do you know when it's sort of gone too far?
A good tip off is if you feel exhausted and resentful after you've been kind and generous and giving, you shouldn't feel like that. If your kindness and your generosity comes from a genuine, healthy place, it should fill you up. You should feel more full afterwards, not drained and exhausted. Mm-hmm. If you have spent your day doing absolutely everything for everybody in your life today, and you flopped into bed totally exhausted, drained, fed up and annoyed that nobody has thanked you, nobody has done anything for you or acknowledged you, then there's a clue there that you might be codependent.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's that need to keep giving to people who don't give back as well. Healthy people don't do that. Healthy people take note of people who aren't appreciative in their lives, and they just spend a lot less time with them, and they give a lot less to them. And it happens very, very quickly, whereas a codependent person will keep kind of almost pushing that button, like trying to get something out of the person by giving more and more, trying harder and harder.
And it will never be enough.
Yeah, it will never be enough. Because the moment that you get some appreciation, then you're not going to get appreciated for that next time, because that's the standard. And so the standard has to keep being raised. And this is where the sort of codependent narcissistic dynamic comes in as well. Codependent people really attract narcissists, and narcissistic people look for codependent people because that's what they want, is, you know, a narcissist wants a feeder. And a codependent person wants to feed. I think what's really important to remember is, I'm always speaking about adults because obviously children's needs are different.
Yeah.
children are dependent on us, that isn't an unhealthy thing. That's a healthy thing. They should be dependent on us and we should be there for them and be able to give to them. But I mean, it's a cliche, but it is the whole put your own oxygen mask on first.
Yeah.
If you are dying because you can't breathe, then you are no use to your child in that instance. So when we're talking about adults, I think the important thing to remember is take care of yourself, make sure you're full up, give from the overflow. When you can, I mean, that's the ideal place, of course, but the more full you are, the better position you are to give. And the ideal position is to be so full that you are overflowing with energy and with capacity, and that you can give them from that overflow. It's really important to remember as well that other people are adults, and when we give from a place that we don't, you know, a place that we don't really have, when we're giving from resources that we don't really have to give from, to prop someone else up, we aren't enabling them to be adults. What we actually do is that we infantilize people. So we see this quite a lot in romantic relationships, where particularly women are really good at infantilizing their partners, thinking that their partners can't cook for themselves, they can't clean, they can't get their clothes ready for work, their partners can't take an equal role in childcare. And actually, their partners are quite capable, I'm assuming. We see this quite often with heterosexual relationships where women infantilize men, and that isn't doing them any favors. So we think that we're giving from this place of kindness and generosity, but actually we're exhausting ourselves and not enabling our partners to be the best, most adult, you know, best version of themselves. We're not allowing them to fulfill their potential. We're making them into children.
What are some sort of things that really helped you on your journey of recovery? You know, what are the sort of first practical steps that people can take to help them along that path of breaking that pattern of codependency for themselves?
So the first thing is to get on your own recovery journey, whatever that looks like for you, whether it is reading books, whether it's getting some coaching, whether it's going to a Codependence Anonymous meeting. Get on your recovery journey. That starts to strengthen you. Then you can start to do things like put boundaries in place. You can start to put a self-care routine in place. As small as it may be, it might be, you know, 5 minutes of meditation in the morning. It might be asking a family member to help pick up the children from school so that you just have one less thing on your plate. So starting with really practical things, I think, is really, really important. And then as you start to strengthen your boundaries and you go along your recovery journey, what you start to find is that unhealthy dynamics show up really quickly. And if you can hold your boundary, which is the hard part, but when you start to hold your boundary, they naturally start to fall away. So you start to find that actually you want to change jobs, because you've realized that you are being taken advantage of, you're being overworked, underpaid and underappreciated at work, and you'll find yourself looking for a new job. Perhaps you find yourself in the position where you realize you don't want to be in your romantic relationship anymore, or that you need to get some counseling or some help in your relationship to bring more balance and a healthier dynamic into that relationship. Perhaps you start to teach the children to help you out around the house and take more responsibility and allow them to grow, allow them to become, you know, allow them to become responsible, healthy adults in their own right, rather than kind of passing on this unhealthy dynamic to them. And so that's how it starts. It's about acknowledgement, acknowledging where you are, that you don't want to be there, and you get on a recovery journey, whatever it looks like for you, and then just taking those first few practical steps. And you're not going to want to put the boundaries in place because it feels really hard. But when you do, that's the big shift.
I think that people struggle with boundaries because they don't want to disappoint people. And when you put boundaries in place, you do end up disappointing people along the way, particularly if somebody has... they know you as that person who's always doing everything for everybody else. Yep. So they sort of have to recalibrate who you are, what you mean to them, because now you're sort of behaving differently.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's really just about holding the stare with that. You are an adult. You choose who you want to be. You choose how you want to live your life. And it will feel very jarring. But if you decide from one day to the next that yesterday, you know, that was acceptable to me, today it isn't, that's your choice. You get to choose that. You get to say it. You get to put the boundary in place. You get to hold it. And if somebody gets upset about that, that's okay. They can have that feeling too. You know, it's allowing other people to have their emotions. And again, not infantilizing people. You know, don't infantilize another person around your boundaries. People don't need to be, you know, as long as you're kind of not, you're kind and you're not mean about the way that you put the boundaries in place, and you just say, you know, this is what's going to work for me now. And, you know, let other people have their feelings around that. Let them play it out. That's okay. Like, they're allowed those feelings too. If you just hold the stare with it, it will pass. And it's about re-educating, you know, as you re-educate yourself around who you are, you re-educate others as well.
Yeah, totally. Because when you respect your boundaries, you send an invitation to others to respect them as well.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's the hardest bit, isn't it? Well, I think with boundaries, I think some people struggle with the language, like knowing how to say that doesn't work for me, actually, or no, I'm not able to do that. I think some people struggle to know what to say.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips on that? Or maybe there's some resources that you have that can help people?
So I have a whole, so I have a course called Lovingly Fierce, and I have a whole module in that called Clear Communication. And so that's what I like to teach to my clients, is this method of clear communication. So what we do often as codependent people and people pleasers is we muddy the waters with a lot of emotion and a lot of fluff, a lot of fluff out of fear of what it will feel like for us and for the other person, just to be direct. And I also think there's a lot of confusion around what it means to be clear and direct and honest. So particularly in British culture, we think we get clear, direct and honest mixed with rude and blunt. There's a big difference between someone who is rude and blunt and unkind and tactless than someone who is direct and honest and speaks in a factual manner. So my tip would be try to take the emotion out of it. Try not to justify, try not to get over emotional around it. Try not to, if you don't make it a big fuss, it doesn't need to be a big fuss. You might still get a reaction, but the more of a kind of a fuss and a show, and the more emotional and stressful you make it in the way that you communicate it, the more it will be received in that way, as if it's a big deal. So if you can say, no, I'm not available for that, but thanks for the offer. And it's so simple, so clean, so quick. And it might feel shocking to the other person, but it's delivered in such a calm, factual way. And even with kindness where it's appropriate, you know, thanking a person for the opportunity or the offer, but sorry, I'm not available for that. That's it. Like, so easy. And it will feel so hard if that isn't the way that you are accustomed to communicating with people. But once you get there, you realize how much easier it is than all the fluff and nonsense you've been doing the whole rest of the time.
Yeah, so it's like starting with the little things, isn't it? So if a friend asks you out of the blue to hang out and you'd planned a self-care night, rather than saying, no, I've got my self-care night, I've been so tired, I've been working 12 hours a day all week and I really need this time and da-da-da, and then make a big song and dance about it.
Yeah.
Rather than doing that, you could just simply say, I'm having some me time that night. How about we meet up in a week's time?
Yeah.
Very simply, direct. Yeah, exactly. So I think when you start with the really little things, like an invitation from a friend, or even just what to have for dinner, if that's an issue as well, you feel like you can't sort of just express what you really want.
Yeah.
Starting with those small things can help you to then cultivate confidence, to develop more of a sense of self.
Yeah, I think understanding that whenever we communicate with another adult as well, when we're creating when we're communicating a boundary, it's a request, not a demand. And I think that's a really important distinction to remember, is that a person can, you know, the other person has autonomy to react in the way that they want to react as well. That's not your responsibility. They can have their feelings, and that's okay. So, you know, just again, around these small things, you know, around what to have for dinner.
Yeah.
You can say, you know, I don't really feel like Indian tonight. Actually, I prefer Italian.
Mm.
And your partner can say, well, I don't want Italian. Can we try something else? And you can negotiate, and that's okay. And you can stick to your boundary, and you can say, actually, Italian's the only one for me. You go to the Chinese, I'll go to the Italian. That's how we'll do it. And you can negotiate then from that place. Mm-hmm. And when you understand that it isn't a demand, then I think you can start to feel more comfortable around it, particularly as a people pleaser. Because again, I think this is where we get that confusion between direct and honest and blunt and rude. It's a request, not a demand. And that person can choose to respect the request or not. And then based on their response, you can choose whether you want to be in that situation or not.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, it's making me think of a quote from Brené Brown, where she talks about the importance of boundaries in her life. And she says, I'm not as sweet anymore, but I'm way more loving.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to just go along with every request. So she'd, you know, do the school run, and one of the mums would ask her to bake some cupcakes, and she'd be like, and her voice would go really high.
Yeah.
And she'd end up resentfully making these bloody cupcakes for the school run. And and she said what really worked for her was buying a ring that she would sort of spin this ring when someone would request something of her, and she would just take a minute to think about it. And she would say this mantra to herself: choose discomfort over resentment.
Yes, exactly. And it's that resentment that shows up.
Yeah.
It's such a good tip off that what you're doing is not coming from a healthy place. If you feel frustrated, exhausted and resented while you're making the cupcakes, or while you're sitting there eating the Indian food, there's a tip off that probably wasn't the right choice for you. And I also want to say, this is not, there should be no guilt or shame around, you know, not holding a boundary, or, you know, making a choice that wasn't right for you. In every moment is a learning moment. So whenever you feel that resentment, it's just a tip. Okay, try something different next time. Try the clear communication. Try holding the boundary. If you let your boundaries drop, if you let somebody overstep, that's okay. The boundary still exists. You can withhold it. You can fortify it any time. You know, you can put it back up, and you can say, yeah, okay, I let it drop that time, but here it is. It still stands. And, you know, it's about practice.
Yes.
Things build with practice.
And you can always choose again.
Yes, always choose again.
Yeah. And I imagine that having regular check-ins with yourself throughout the day, and checking in on your energy, and if you're feeling exhausted and resentful, like you say, just sort of being curious about that and asking yourself, why do I feel so resentful right now? What's caused me to feel resentful? Is it something that's happened today? Is it that conversation? Is it that thing that I agreed to?
Mm-hmm.
And just keeping a journal to just start like playing detective on it.
Definitely,
I'd imagine that, you know, as you start to record these moments when you're feeling so exhausted and resentful, then just to sort of be really curious about why that could be, from a place of non-judgment, with pure compassion and love for yourself, but knowing that, okay, well, what am I going to do with this knowledge now? How can I use that and implement that in my life? Is it, you know, having a conversation with that person and negotiating a deadline, or negotiating my decision on something? Maybe actually I said yes to this in the moment, but on reflection, it's not quite working.
Yeah.
That's so liberating, knowing that you can change your mind.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, it's wild. It's wild, isn't it? Yeah. It's
the mic drop.
Yeah. It is the simplest thing, but just knowing that if you said yes and it doesn't feel good, you can go back and say, actually, what I meant was no.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're safe to do that. As I say, we're all adults. We can all choose again. And it might feel, depending on your situation, depending on your upbringing, that might feel really radical.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But the more you practice it, the more accustomed to it you'll become, and the more normal it will become for you, and the less kind of radical and out there it will feel. So, yeah, practice.
Yes. Yeah, and it will feel rebellious because you're rebelling against a wider societal norm and programming, but also you've probably seen codependent relationships modelled. I certainly did throughout life. I saw probably only codependent relationships modelled until a certain age. And so it feels very rebellious to go against that, what you know, what feels familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And because we are human beings, we interpret things that are unfamiliar as unsafe.
Yeah.
And so it is radical. I think it's really radical, this journey. And as you say, it's all a learning, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned books earlier that could be really useful on that sort of journey of recovery. What books, or do you have any sort of any particular books that you'd really recommend for people to read?
Yeah, so I've got a few. So the first is the Codependence Anonymous Big Book. So that's for those of you that are kind of familiar with recovery circles, with every sort of 12-step meeting, there's like a big book. So Codependence Anonymous is derived from Alcoholics Anonymous. So there's a book which has got the steps of Codependence Anonymous in there. And it's also got, it's got loads of different stories from people who've been through the program, and they share their stories of recovery, strength and hope. And what I love so much about that book is it's really reassuring for people that are going through any different form of codependency, because there are stories from men, women, people who've been codependent around, you know, relationships, work, people who've had other kind of sub addictions around codependency as well. So people who've perhaps masked the pain of the codependency with alcoholism and that kind of thing. So that's really beautiful, and it's really easy just to pick up and dive into at any point. And I always recommend Codependence Anonymous as a group as well to all my clients. So definitely Google that. There are meetings all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Another book that I found really, really helpful if you feel like you might be in an unhealthy relationship dynamic, perhaps with somebody who's narcissistic, perhaps somebody who sort of takes advantage of you emotionally and of you in all kinds of resources, whether it's energetically or financially. There's a book called Sweet Relief from the Everyday Narcissist. It's one of the most helpful books I've found about unhealthy relationship dynamics. Gives really good help on sort of coping techniques and ways to spot a narcissistic relationship. And along the same lines, if you might be in a bit more of a severe sort of unhealthy relationship dynamic with somebody, is Should I Stay or Should I Go? So there was quite a few books called that, actually. So we'll share the link so you know the specific one that I mean. But they're some really, really helpful ones. And then books by Pia Melody as well on codependent recovery, and also recovery from love addiction, which are quite similar in terms of addictions. But yeah, we'll share the links to those too.
Thank you. You mentioned when we spoke on the phone before we came here to do the podcast, you'd mentioned a quote from Alan de Botton, the founder of the School of Life, that I think is really useful. If you could share that quote here as well. About addiction.
So he said in one of his many, many very engaging videos of his talks online,
I love
that
those.
We need to redefine how we look at addiction. And addiction is anything that we do to get away from ourselves, from our own heads. We do to get out of our own heads and avoid ourselves. And for me, that just really rang true, because I think there's a lot of resistance to wanting to acknowledge addiction of all forms in society. Mm. Addiction is something that has a lot of stigma around it. You know, particularly if you don't have a sort of substance addiction, which is seen as a very disruptive thing. And there's a lot of stigma around that. And it's quite obvious, you know, if you have some sort of substance addiction, or it can be. Whereas with codependency, which I certainly see as an addiction, a lot of those behaviours are socially acceptable. So the people pleasing, putting everybody above yourself. I have secondary addictions that play out. So I have ways that I self-medicate my codependency. Big one for me is sugar addiction, numbing out with Netflix and social media. Those things are totally socially acceptable. And in the past, also romantic relationships, so dating sites and just any kind of attention from men, they were ways that I would self-medicate, but they're all socially acceptable things to do, you know, eating sweets, watching a bit of telly and downloading Tinder. You know, it's not, it wouldn't be something that's seen as an addiction, but when it's, I know that when I'm using those things, I'm trying to get away from myself. I'm trying to avoid myself. I don't want to be with myself. I can't sit in my own head. I'm trying to get out of my own body. And so I think when we look at addiction in that way, then we can all start to understand it with more empathy and more compassion, and perhaps acknowledge that many of us have addictions or have had addictions at some point in our life. And that's okay. When we acknowledge them, we can recover from them. But the more we avoid them and stuff them in a dark corner of the room and pretend that they don't exist, the more they fester and they grow and they become unhealthy and something that we can't recover from. And, you know, they affect us in a big way as a society.
And that's the difference, isn't it? It's when that behavior, that particular behavior, is taking you away from yourself. And I really recognize myself in what you just described. All throughout my sort of late teens and early 20s, I realized that actually in all those relationships, I never did anything for myself. So every single weekend, I would go and stay at that partner's house and we'd spend the weekend together. I'd pack a bag and I'd go home and then carry on my my day job Monday to Friday. And I realized that I never did anything for myself, and totally rejected myself through those relationships. And I always felt that something was missing. And I realized that what was missing was me.
That
if anyone's listening to this and wondering, like, what is the difference then between the people pleasing and some of those traits and the codependency, it's like when it takes you away from yourself and it has you avoiding yourself. And that's where it becomes unhealthy. And I definitely recognized that that had been a pattern of mine. Going from one relationship to the next as well. Very little gap in between.
Yeah, because your self-worth is so anchored in relating to another person. And again, you know, we're social creatures and it's lovely to be in a relationship. And I think most people are seeking some form of long-term loving relationship at some point in their lives. But it's that need. And I think that's a simple kind of definition for codependency, is it's the difference between want and need. You know, we can desire that loving long-term relationship and be willing to, in the meantime, live our own lives, be who we are, develop who we are, and be kind of ready for the right person to come along when the timing is right, rather than that need and that push that we see often in codependency. And I've absolutely done exactly that same thing, just bounced from relationship to relationship to relationship, particularly in my younger years, with very little or sometimes no gap, sometimes an overlap.
And I think what can be really helpful is just spending some quality time with you, really getting to know who you are. I never ever spent any quality time with myself, and I was always sort of exhausted and burnt out. And it wasn't until I went on my own self-love and self-development journey, and that was the key for me, that a journey that I'm still on, that I'm still developing, I'm still learning and growing. And that was so important for me to spend that quality time with myself and get to know who I actually am and build more of a sense of self, which has helped me to assert myself more in relationships and sort of be on that path of breaking that pattern so that I am in a place of empowerment in my relationships. And knowing that I definitely have those tendencies to people please as well. And I have to keep an eye on them and just be mindful of where I'm doing that too often. Mm. And again, where it becomes a need to please somebody else or to prove myself to somebody else.
Yeah.
And I think that there's this pattern of control. If I can just do everything just so, and you know, like if I can be perfect, if I can prove myself, then I will be loved and I will be worthy.
That need for control again is a very kind of classic codependent trait. Codependent people need everything to happen as they have imagined it on their schedule, and it's why we do that whole infantilizing thing, taking control of doing everything for everybody, because then if we do it, at least we know it's done in the way that we need it to be done, so that we can feel safe and solid and secure.
Yes.
A friend of mine who is also codependent, because so many of us are, said to me that she went to therapy, and that was where she kind of started to first work on her codependency. And her therapist said to her, how much of your life do you need to be in control of to be happy? And as she's saying this, this grin is growing on my face because I know her so well. And I know that she's going to say 100%. Mm. She has to be in control of 100% of her life to feel comfortable. And I know that there are some of you out there listening who are going, yeah, of course, if I'm not in control of 100% of my life, then what? Like, you're going to freak out, you're going to lose your shit. And a therapist said, okay, the norm is about 30 to 40%. Mm. A healthy person only needs to feel in control of about 30 to 40% of their life. So if you think of every area of your life, you know, you're interacting with people on a daily basis. There's very little of your life that you are truly in control of.
It's an illusion, isn't it?
Yeah, it is an absolute illusion. And that's where that exhaustion comes in, because you're constantly trying to control everything, but you can't. And so it's this, you know, it's this uphill battle, or it's like you're fighting a shadow. You're never going to win.
Mm.
You're never going to be in control of everything. And so when you can get to that point where you actually just let go of, of the need to control, or this illusion of control, you realize that the majority of things actually just stay the same. Mm. But you get loads of energy back, and you get loads of yourself back.
Mm. And then thinking, you know, what's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
Because I'm just thinking about my clients who are on, some of them on a dating journey at the moment, and there is this tendency to want to control how the date goes and, you know, show up in a certain way. Yeah. And, you know, making, quite often it involves making assumptions about what this other person wants from me, like who do they want me to be, and sort of playing up to that.
Yeah.
And it's all to avoid rejection, really, isn't it? It's all to prove that you're worthy of this date.
Yeah.
And ultimately to avoid rejection, but in the end you just reject yourself, which is the most painful thing.
Yes.
When you're feeling the neglect and rejection in yourself.
And so then the cycle continues, and the downward spiral continues then, to avoid the rejection and the self-neglect and the lack of self-worth and lack of self-love. Then we try to control more, because we think, well, then perhaps if I was just better, if I was just more of this or more of that, then perhaps then I would be worthy. And of course, that you are worthy.
You're already worthy.
That is the great illusion, is, you're already worthy, just as you are. Yes. You need do nothing, be nothing, just as you are.
Yes, because rejection is such a painful experience, because it's a primal fear, isn't it, that we'll be rejected and abandoned. And back in the day, that meant death, and that meant, you know, rejection from the tribe meant death. And so that's why it feels so painful. But it's knowing that rejection is an inevitable part of life, particularly if you are dating, you're on that dating journey, rejection will happen, because you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea. And so the rejection will happen either way. You can either work super hard to try and avoid it and end up feeling exhausted, plus the rejections will happen because that's part of life, or you can just sort of surrender to the fact that rejections will happen. I'm dating, I'm meeting people, I'm not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but you're not as emotionally invested.
Yeah.
You know, just knowing that, like, sometimes you're not a good fit with someone, and it's not a match, and that's okay. You're still worthy. You still get to walk in and out of that date worthy of love and belonging, worthy of a loving relationship, regardless of how the date goes with this person, that your worthiness isn't dependent upon how they appraise you or perceive you.
Yes. Yeah. So I love a visual metaphor. It really helps me. And I share them a lot with my clients. And I think something that really helped me was kind of visualizing myself as this whole complete being. And then anything that was for me would kind of stick. It would almost kind of stick to me like I'm Velcro. Mm-hmm. And then anything that isn't for me, it just slides away. It just falls off because it doesn't stick because it's not for me. So rejection then is less, it's less of an active process and it's just more of a passive process. It's kind of a, that just wasn't for me. That job wasn't right for me. That person wasn't right for me. You know, that friendship wasn't right for me. And it's okay. And it wasn't right for the other person either. Obviously, it wasn't right for them either. And that's okay. And they're a whole person. And what's for them will stick to them too. And so then we can really start to value our own worthiness and our own sort of wholeness. And not be so afraid of that neglect. You know, it comes from childhood as well, you know, to be, if we aren't loved by our parents, by our family, they don't take care of us. And that, as you say, that's death. And that's where it comes from. But we become adults and we become capable of taking care of ourselves. And we don't need another person, but it's lovely to have them around and we want them around. And again, back to that whole difference between need and want.
Well, I was going to ask you, which is the final question that I was going to ask, what's the key message that you'd love people to take away from this conversation? But would it be that?
So it's that whole cheesy thing that you sometimes get asked is like, the world is ending, 3 minutes, you have a microphone, what do you want to say? And I think I want to say, like, you are worthy. You're worthy exactly as you are. You might not believe it right now. That's okay. You can lean on my faith in the meantime. But trust me, you are worthy exactly as you are. And the sooner you get on your journey to realizing that and understanding it, because you might know it in your head, but knowing it in your heart and really feeling it in your body, the sooner you will get on a journey to just so much more love and more fulfillment and more enjoyment out of your life, less exhaustion, less resentment. I can't even tell you what is waiting for you on the other side of that.
Wow. It's radical. So liberating.
Yeah.
Just, it will transform all your relationships. And if you can't believe, as you say, if you can't yet believe it, start with the willingness to believe it and just start there. Start where you are. Thank you so much, Jo. This has been such a fascinating conversation, taking so much away from it. So thank you so much for being our guest. And where can people find you and how can people work with you?
So you can check out my work at jowestwood.com and I hang out on Instagram at jowestwood. And my online course, Lovingly Fierce, is available now. So go and have a look at that. And shoot me an email or slide in the DMs, have a little chat with me. I'd love to hear from you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say best podcast ever. Thank you.